Hey, it's Tony Bruschi. If you enjoy this podcast, Real Ghost Stories Online, be sure to check out our other paranormal podcast, The Grave Talks, with new episodes every Monday and Tuesday. Just search The Grave Talks wherever you download podcasts. Now, here's a 15-minute preview of one of this week's episodes of The Grave Talks. Today on The Grave Talks, the Villisca Axe Murder House, a conversation with Craig Bacon. A family returns from church, a meal is served, children play, and eventually everyone retires to their beds for another night of sleep. However, this night would be like no other. It would be the final night of these eight souls' lives. From the shadows of the attic, it is believed that one man emerged and would swing his axe multiple times, brutally murdering the entire family. Who was this man? Why did he commit such a disturbed act? These are the questions that still linger today, as do the spirits of the Villisca Axe Murder House. Today, we discuss all this and more with paranormal investigator Greg Bacon.
This goes back to 1912, where there was a family called the Moore family, and it was the last day of school for the family, and they invited two of their school friends over, so it's about eight people total, and they all went to church that night for the last day of school. They went to church, which is about maybe, oh, I'd say about 3-4 blocks from where the house is, the house in Villisca. They go to church. They, you know, probably have a good time, and they walk back home. And the two school children who stayed over with them, they ended up staying the night. They went to church with them. Then they came back and they stayed the night. But what ended up happening, and what they had no idea at the time, was that there was at least one person still in the house that they had no idea was there. And this person, and it could possibly be more than one person, it's never been verified, it's never been solved. This person had come out during the night when they were sleeping and murdered them all with an axe. Now, you know, that leads to a lot of questions, obviously, because that's kind of the story that you get when you go there, or you look on the website or the established history. But when you really think about it, there's eight people in the house, one person with an axe, you know, and it shows, evidence shows that not everybody was asleep when things were happening. And so there's some rumors that go around with what actually really happened there. But to get back to the story itself, this was something that Villisca, Iowa, did not have a police department. They had what they call a peace officer. And this peace officer was inundated immediately. He was not equipped to handle a mass murder scene. And so people from around the area went to the murder scene, and they, in quotes, help clean up the murder scene itself, which immediately ruined any chance to really figure out what's going on. Over time, there were multiple people who were brought to trial. One was a reverend that was brought to trial a couple times and was acquitted both times. He was linked to the murders in the sense that he talked about the murders happening while he's waiting for a train to leave out of Villisca. The problem is that he did that prior to anyone knowing about the murders happening. He did it early that morning, and it wasn't found out till later in the morning that these murders had happened. There's a lot of questions around it, but from that point onward, you know, depending on who you talk to, what you watch on TV or anything else, it's been said that that house has had some you know, nasty energy in it, that there's people who had lived there growing up there who had been terrified to be in there. They saw things happen there that they never, that they can't explain. And, you know, back in the mid to late 1990s, I think the house became available. A man who kind of was in charge of the Villisca Preservation Society, he bought it and restored it to how it was back in the day, removed all the electricity and stuff. And then I think it was probably early 2000s that they started charging for people to stay the night there and do investigations. You do pay to do investigations there, but, you know, it's one of those, I hate to say it because it's gross to say it this way, Tony, but it's like a thrill place for investigators to go and do that. But the downside to that, of course, is that there are spirits of the children who died there. You know, the family is still there. You know, you go there and you can clearly have communication with the family still there. They haven't crossed over there, but there's also so much more there, and a lot of disgusting entities are there also. And I do want to just point out too that this story for Villisca was so big that it actually knocked off the Titanic as being like front page news stories in much of America.
Which is pretty amazing, because I'm a Titanic dork, and I was into Titanic way before the movie, but I was a kid who would literally go and get the microfilms and look at the headlines from April 14th, 1912, and then just go through the newspapers of that era for as many days ahead as I could. And it was Titanic as the headline for like almost a straight year on most newspapers throughout the country. So for something to bounce it off would have been quite a story. And obviously this was quite a story.
Yes.
I mean,
yes.
It's a story of horror. I want to get some insight into what kind of, and we can talk about some of the rumors and phrase them as such, but what kind of reputation did this family have around town prior to this event occurring?
I think that overall, it seemed like that the reputation seemed to be fine, but you know what, as time goes on, and none of this is verified, but there is a sort of belief that, not even a belief, a theory. How about that? There's a theory that the matriarch Josiah Moore, that possibly there was a link to the murders happening because perhaps he was having an affair with somebody else that was connected to the murders. And the problem with that is that that's not verified, and that you know, you got to be very careful about that, because you don't want to tarnish reputation of somebody who we don't know all the facts to. And there are so many like too many players mm-hmm. in this, that you know, you just your mind go all over the place. There is a man who had was prosecuted for the Vliskax murder house mm-hmm. Killings, and he was not found guilty, and he went on to, I believe he went on to Colorado, and he killed his own mother with an axe.
Wow.
So it's like, but you know, it's, but there's so many, all these other people have, you know, like, they have reason to believe that they could be a part of it. And, you know, one of them being Reverend George Kelly, who I mentioned, you know, earlier, who was talking about the, you know, the murders. You know, he left town between, I think, 5 a.m. and 5:30, and that was hours before the bodies were discovered. When he was in court, he had mentioned that he had been around the area earlier, and he was intrigued by the Moore's house because he thought he saw something which he called a shadow figure looking around, like kind of peeping around. Now, Reverend George Kelly is also known to have been a peeping Tom himself.
Okay.
It's very odd, and he had been accused of being a peeping Tom, and he even asked young women and girls to pose nude for him on several occasions, which, you know, had, you know, obviously, you know, gotten a lot of attention from, you know, police wherever he goes. He's one of those that would kind of, you know, travel around. Mm-hmm. You know, he wasn't based in Vlisk or anything like that.
It's like a bad game of Clue with this house, as far as like who did what. The Reverend George Kelly, the fact that he had knowledge of the murder and he had mentioned this to someone at a train station prior to anyone else having any knowledge of it, how did he explain that? Was there ever any explanation that was given that would make any sort of logical sense?
You know, it's really odd, because it seemed like that he had, you know, displayed a fascination with the case afterwards. And when he went around, he talked about it quite a bit. He was arrested. He was arrested for other things, but I don't really know, to be honest myself, exactly how he was able to get off from it. It doesn't really make a whole lot of sense. And you know, he even confessed to the murders in court, but the jury didn't believe his confession.
How bizarre.
It is bizarre. And, you know, also, just to kind of give a little bit more context to what I had brought up earlier regarding, you know, you asked about the reputation of the family. Mm-hmm. It was actually Iowa Senator Frank Jones, who Josiah worked for, but it was rumored that Josiah had an affair with Jones's daughter-in-law.
Okay.
But once again, there is no evidence that supports that either.
Sure.
So, you know, it's one of those cases that there's a lot of pieces that, and that's just two of them.
Yeah.
That's just two of, you know, we talked also about, you know, the other one, I think it's Henry Lee Moore, who is the one that ended up, killing, you know, with an axe afterwards. And it's no relation to the Moore family. You know, there's just a few of them. There's so many. It's almost like a JFK sort of thing, where there's so many people that were involved and that you can't really pin it, except for the one who admits to it and then is still acquitted.
How did the gentleman who was he was brought up on charges but then acquitted, how did he get into the picture as far as the one that they believed that they were going to try for this murder?
Well, he was the one that was talking about the killings before anyone else discovered the bodies.
This is the Reverend.
This is the Reverend.
Oh,
yes.
Okay. I was thinking that. So this is George Kelly. This is the one he was. And then is he the one who killed his mother or whatever in Colorado?
No, that was Henry Lee
okay,
Moore.
So Henry Lee.
You know what I mean? There's many.
Henry Lee is who I'm talking about. How did Henry Lee get brought up on charges, but then get acquitted? Like what tied him to the whole circle of everything here?
He was it appears to be that he was a suspected serial killer. Mm-hmm. and he had, as I said, killed his mother and grandmother after Vlisca. But I'm not 100% sure what it was that got them to look at him. It might have been just other acts murder, because I mean, it's like they said, he was suspected serial killer, and it might have been that he was there at the time of the killings and they went for it. I mean, I'm not 100% certain on that.
What is very bizarre about the whole thing when you look at it is how one person with one axe could take out eight people and none of them were able to escape or try and overpower them. The family, what sort of ages are we talking here in terms of the family who passed away?
We're talking about Josiah was 43, Sarah, his wife, was 39, and then their four children. Herman was 11, Mary was 10, Arthur was 7, Paul was 5.
So several of them were small children.
They were very small children. Okay. And depending on who you know, what you know, depending on what you're reading about the killings, you know, there's some that say that like the little girls who were in that were staying over, that they actually that a couple of them had axe marks on their forearms, like they were trying to, defend themselves from axe blades. But I don't know if that's true or not. There's a lot of those sort of like, you know, what happened here, what happened there sort of thing. It was also possible that the children were possibly abused after they were killed. So it was there, you know, there's just layers of mm-hmm. of disgusting situations with this place and with what had happened there.
Hope you enjoyed this 15-minute preview of one of this week's two brand new episodes of The Grave Talks. To hear the rest and get new episodes every Monday and Tuesday right in your podcast feed, search The Grave Talks wherever you download podcasts and press subscribe or visit thegravetalks.com.